Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the 2021 National Federation of the Blind of Illinois Hybrid State Convention. We are stronger than the pandemic.
Yeah.
My name is Marilyn Green. I am State President of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois. Thank you to everyone for being here in person and out in Zoom land. I hope that this weekend will be a weekend of education, fellowship, and as you all know, we had a lot of fun last night. So much fun that I actually slept through the night. So thank you to everyone. I have a few announcements to make. As you all should have received an email notification, we will be using the Civi platform for voting on tomorrow at the student elections and the state affiliate board elections. Please program the telephone number into your phone, and we are going to be doing some test votes later today. So keep your phone nearby. You should have registered to vote with the phone number that you plan on using to vote. So if you use a certain phone number, you have to use that phone number when it's time to vote on today for the test votes and on tomorrow for the elections. That telephone number is 217-439-3900. Again, 217-439-3900. If there are any announcements that you would like to have made up front, please text the phone number 312-343-8396, and your announcement will be made at some point shortly thereafter when we find a moment to make those announcements. 312-343-8396. That is the number if you want to make if you want announcements to be made in general sessions. The voting telephone number is 217-439-3900. Also, the student division would like to thank everyone who participated last night in the IAPS Idol fundraiser. It was a great night of karaoke and dancing. So they want to say thank you for participating. Thank you for your donations. It seems that they made quite a bit of money. So we are very happy. Thank you so much for supporting our student division. Also, the students would like to announce that they are doing a pie fundraising contest called Pie Palooza, where you can donate to get a pie thrown at different individuals throughout the affiliate, different affiliate leaders. So for $100, Dustin Cather. Anil said that's got to happen. For $100, Dustin Cather, who is the former first vice president of IAPS, and he currently holds a board seat on the state affiliate board, he will get a pie thrown at him.
Hooray!
For the student division, for $200, Ellen Bartelt, who is the IAPS student president currently, she will get a pie, as well as Dustin will get a pie in the face. Yep. For $300, Denise Avant, immediate past president of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois, will get a pie in the face.
That's a pie.
Ellen Bartelt will get a pie in the face. Not just a pie to eat, it'll be a pie in the face. Dustin Cather will get a pie in the face. If they reach $400, Patty Chang, second vice president of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois, will get a pie in the face.
For the Federation.
Denise Avant, will get a pie in the face.
Uh-huh.
Ellen Bartelt will get a pie in the face. And Dustin Cather will get a pie in the face. And that is the mark that they have set for tonight, people. What? If they get $500, Denise Avant will be doing all of the programming tomorrow. So, but in all seriousness, if the students raise $500 for Pi Palooza, I, your state president, will get a pie in the face.
All right. Yeah.
Patty Chang will get a pie in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Denise Avant will get a pie in the face.
The
Ellen Bartelt will get a pie in the face.
Ellen.
And Dustin Cather will get
that
a pie in the face.
To
all right.
If we raise 600, can we just get Dustin 6 pies in the face?
I think for 600, Anil Lewis will get a pie in the face. Hecklers, hey, I gotta, you know, it's what I do.
Yeah.
All right, so thank you. I try. So thank you to everyone. If you would like to donate for the Pi Palooza, see Sarah Luna.
Over here.
Yep, Sarah Luna is over there. And also, they also have another contest that the highest bidder? The highest donor will get to throw a pie.
Oh, man.
And they will choose randomly for the other donors to get a pie. And if it's a donor out in Zoom land who makes the largest donation, they will get to choose someone in the room to be their pie thrower. All right. CC volunteer. So if there's anybody in Zoom land who donates, Kathy Wright says she will throw the pie on behalf of you.
Yeah, I want to donate.
All right. I hear Kudzai saying he wants to do it. So the donations for Pi Palooza need to be in by the end of general sessions at 5 p.m. And the pies will be thrown after general sessions, after 9 p.m., out in the atrium. The students will throw down a tarp so that we don't mess up the nice hotel. So looking forward to all of that great stuff going on. So now with all of those announcements being made, let's go on to the business of the National Federation of the Blind. So we're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. So please stand if you are able. And I will start. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everybody, and please continue to stand for our NFB pledge. I pledge to participate actively in the effort of the National Federation of the Blind to achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind, to support the policies and programs of the Federation, and to abide by its constitution. Thank you all so much. You can be seated if you were standing. We also want to offer a moment of silence for one of our chapter members who is no longer with us. Joan Porter was a longtime chapter member of the Chicago chapter. She passed away this year. Joan was born August 20th, 1939, and she passed away this year, June 14th, 2021. We keep Joan and her family and friends in our thought and prayers. Please, a moment of silence. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. We will move on now to our national representative, who we have all been enjoying for these last, since yesterday, who needs no real introduction, but I will give him one nonetheless. Mr. Anil Lewis, he is the Executive Director of Blindness Initiatives at the National Federation of the Blind. Anil, I turn it over to you.
I was hoping if I took my time getting here that you guys just continue to applaud until I got to the stage. It didn't work. Yeah, next time. Remember that tonight. No, I'm kidding. It is indeed my pleasure to be here. Before I get started, though, a word to the wise of the Pies. I've been the active recipient of a pie for the Federation many times, so benefit from my words of wisdom. Bring yourself a nice, damp towel to wipe the pie off, because no one... Good. Glad you're able to join us there, iPad. So now comes one of two responsibilities I have here as a national representative, sent here on behalf of President Bono to fulfill these responsibilities, and I hope that I'm able to do this. If you don't mind, can I take the mask off? In a way that helps continue to build and grow the National Federation of the Blind. This will be the national report. The thing I'd like to really emphasize is this is not me talking about the work that we're doing back at 200 East Well Street, formerly 1800 Johnson Street. This is the work that we all are doing. So if you consider yourself a proud member of the National Federation of the Blind, the things that I'm talking about here this morning are the things that you should be celebrating as well and sharing in the good work that we've done. So hopefully I can keep that in perspective. But before I get started with the overall report, I would be remiss if I didn't again express the regret of President Rick Bono for not being able to be here today. He has a lot of things in the works. And normally at this particular time, I'd share a real personal story with somewhat of a bit of humor. But I think based on the current climate, I think it's important for all of you to know President Rick Bono has been doing a tremendous job of leading this organization over this past year plus. As society has dealt with the racial unrest, and as people think that we're the only organization in the world that's dealing with sexual misconduct, have been dealing with this societal issue in a real robust way, it has really challenged him as a leader of this organization to continue to move us forward. I am personally proud of the work that he has done. He has taken a significant, I don't want to say hit, but yeah, I'll just be honest. He's been persecuted in social media and been still stalwart in working for making sure that we as an organization do what we do to really actively address this social ill. And I'll say, as a social ill, that we've come out.
His iPhone has joined the meeting.
We've come out on the other end of this stronger than we did coming in. And as many entities externally continue to try to ridicule us as though we are some organization filled with perpetrators, we in our mantra recognize that we as blind people are a subset of society, and we are subject to the same societal ills as the rest of the world. The thing that's uniquely different about the Federation is we're not sitting back blaming someone. We're not sitting back playing victim. We're not sitting back acquiescing to the challenge. We're stepping up. We're doing it in a real way that's implementing policies and procedures that have, over the past few months, seemed like it's all we've talked about. But as a result of the hard work that we put in on the front end, we've been able to successfully integrate procedures and protocols in place that make us more of a model organization than most people would think. So as people continue to try to challenge us and the social perception that's out there, we can stand sure and confident that we have done what's right, what's moral, and what's effective. And we will continue to grow to be a strong, morally led organization. So take pride in that, and I thank you for all the work that you've done, but continue to remember to support President Rick Bono in your prayers for the work that he's done and the sacrifice that he's had to make in order to make sure that we can remain a viable organization. Now, I have been observing your new president, Marilyn Green, $500 gets a pie in her face, just letting you guys know that, over this past weekend, but really even before that, I had the opportunity to really get to know her as part of a leadership seminar. And Illinois continues to be an exemplary affiliate within the Federation. You guys have done a tremendous job of preparing and cultivating leadership and creating room for new faces and new ideas to continue to be interjected into our organization. The only way we're able to remain relevant is if we're able to be contemporary. So I applaud you in your choice in electing Marilyn Green as president of our National Federation of the Blind of Illinois, and I count her as a sister in my movement. She's falling on the heels of a very good personal friend of mine. Denise Avant has always impressed me. I don't know how to explain the one deviant behavior that she has, participating in the Ski for Light activity. Don't know why anyone would want to spend time. God bless you. You are my heroine in that event. If I could only be as motivated to be physically active as you, I wouldn't have this middle that I'm trying to get rid of. But beyond that, she has been an extremely important member of our organization, helping us in so many of our national efforts, not only just as a member of the national board, but supporting our Jacobus Timberg Law Symposium, et cetera. So many things you've done, Denise, and I applaud you for continuing the good work. Now, before I get into the report, which of course I'm gonna have to abbreviate because I'm taking this point of privilege to express my appreciation to these individuals, I could do a whole presentation on Patty Chang. I came to know Patty in a real way as we served as members of the National Board of Directors, and that is indeed a duty, a very noble duty on behalf of the Federation. But the benefit of that is it really is where you can find out that we as an organization operate as a family. Individuals coming from all around the country coming together for one singular purpose to build the National Federation of the Blind, but then always simultaneously developing personal relationships. Patty's more like a sister to me than most. I love her candor, her openness. I love her ability to be assertive, and I love her ability to listen and change her opinion if you give her the information that requires her to do so. She, in my opinion, is a model member of the Federation, and I continue to count her as a sister, a friend, a mentor, and thank you, Patty, for your sacrifice to this organization as well. I know that there are so many other individuals in this affiliate that I would love to give appreciation to, but I can't do that, not at this particular time. But know that I love you all and appreciate the work that you've done, because I am filled with hope, energy, and love by participating in the National Federation of the Blind, because every day my expectations are raised. I recognize that my contributions make a difference to myself and to others. In instances like this, I can celebrate my accomplishments with my Federation family. And I appreciate the fact that this Federation is definitely stronger than the pandemic. So let's talk about some of the work that we've been doing. This is my first experience in person for a while. I'm glad that it's there, but I am prayerful that in 2002, around July 5th through the 10th, that we'll have another in-person event in New Orleans, the National Federation of the Blind National Convention. Let the good times roll. Yeah, I'll leave the French to you, Marilyn. You can offer. I have to practice. Yeah, I have to practice before I get to New Orleans. So I'm looking forward to that. But in the meantime, let's continue to do the work of the Federation. We have rebranded October, and it's not Meet the Blind Month, but we still hope people still meet the blind, to Blind Equality. I just want to say equity. Equality Achievement Month. And I think it's powerful because this is our Sunday morning, people. This is when we can celebrate a whole month and recognize our achievements as we fight for equality that continue to motivate us throughout the rest of the year. And hopefully we can continue that energy. One of the biggest things that I hope that we're doing at this particular time, especially not just throughout the rest of the year, is working on our membership building activities. And there's a host of resources that we put in place to help. We have the monthly membership phone calls. We have a quarterly open house where individuals who may be on the fence about whether they want to join the Federation can ask those candid questions to get information that will help them make the right decision. We really worked on our membership onboarding so that as individuals come to know us and experience the energy and the love that we have, that they recognize the true purpose of the organization so that when they come and join and pay their dues, they recognize that they're becoming a member of one of the most transformative organizations of blind people in the world. And we continue to do that in a way that expresses a commitment to diversity like none other. We recognize that blindness, again, is a subset of society. And if we continue to build on the diversity of our society, we continue to be stronger together. There's a host of other things that we're putting in place, like online PSAs, opportunities for people to participate on national committees to do the work of the Federation. So many things that you can do to make sure that you're feeling a part of what we're doing. If you want to be active, we have a job for you to do. All you need to do is just reach out. Let us know what you're interested in doing, and we'll make sure we fold in your energy into that of the full Federation. We as an organization, to our core, are a civil rights advocacy organization. We do advocacy in a host of different levels. Some of the successes that we've had through our advocacy, not just our legislative efforts, are we working collectively with Amazon to make sure that blind people can get jobs in their fulfillment centers. We've been making sure that the LabCorp patient kiosks are accessible to blind individuals, which is very important, especially in this COVID era. And we work to make sure that many COVID vaccine pages and testing pages are also accessible, because we want to make sure that we're able to take advantage of the appropriate medical services to make sure that we can continue to interact in society. Our rideshare advocacy continues to make sure that we can take advantage of Lyft, Uber, and other opportunities that allow us to travel independently throughout our environment. We work actively around education. Our education technology survey is live. We want all of our students, whether you be traditional or non-traditional, that if you're dealing with education technology, we want to know if you're having problems, but also we want to know if you're having successes, because we as an organization can amplify those best practices that are out there to make sure that blind people can access them and hopefully serve as a motivation for others to duplicate the same. I need to state that we are the most transformative organization. We have a reputation of being tremendous advocates, and people think that we have unlimited resources in order to advocate for individuals. Our litigation is second to none, but I need to let all of you know, who don't, who may not know, we cannot and would not be able to provide legal assistance for each and every issue that blind people face every day. And for that reason, we have to be more strategic with our litigation, really overall with our advocacy, but specifically with our litigation. And although we may not be able to provide you an attorney to help you fight discrimination that you're facing against your local paratransit provider, we can identify those cases that will result in a systemic change in the provision of services across the nation. So we do look strategically for those instances where we can help support an individual or a group of individuals in demanding their rights to equality that will not only help those individuals, but will help all blind people. So trust and be assured that the national organization is using those resources in a responsible way to make sure that although we may not be able to individually impact you all through your specific instance, we are working aggressively to make sure that there's a systemic change. So we have settled in a systemic fashion the voter discrimination in Maryland, which is already having impact across the country. Issues with Indiana Family Social Services that also may help that family, but also will serve as example for us to make sure that we can leverage that for other instances across the country. Curitin Incorporated, the Federal Office of Personnel Management around employment issues, Colorado Department of Corrections, all of those legislative wins were not just successful for those individuals, but for us as blind people. We continue to work to have similar successes with Airbnb, the McDonald's self-service kiosk, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. The California Department of Motor Vehicles, not for cars yet, but since those kiosks are being used so much more for other public services, we want to make sure that they're accessible. And when we do get to the point where we actually have to get a driver's license, they'll already be accessible, just like the cars we're working on. So you can get all this information if you go to nfb.org/legal. You can get more information about that. Our legislative efforts are really the core of what makes us the powerful entity that we are. Our presence in D.C. is the envy of most organizations, not just nonprofits, but organizations overall. I notice on the agenda that you do have competent individuals that are going to be talking about our legislative efforts in the Washington seminar. So I'll just breeze through and talk about how we're working on parental rights legislation overall with the Model Parental Rights Bill that's out there. The Access Affordable Technology Act is in play, and we're doing tremendous work on making sure that that becomes law. Blind individuals have to pay an additional amount of money in order to obtain the equipment to allow us to be equally competitive. This Braille display that I'm using here is $5,000. Well, I have to be honest, it was much less because I bought a hand-me-down from Denise Avant. So it's made it much more affordable, but it's still something I'd love to take a tax credit on because it was something that everybody else did not have to buy. The Medical Device Accessibility Act is moving forward. I think that's very important. We're doing some significant work specifically in the area of accessible insulin pumps. I'm a type 2 diabetic. I'm not insulin dependent, so I'm taking advantage of some of the technologies that are out there. But as I work and learn about this issue, there are individuals out there that are using insulin pumps, and the insulin pumps do kind of open up an opportunity for better self-care. But if they're not accessible, then blind individuals won't be able to take advantage of this new technology. So we're making some inroads there, but we want to make sure we don't just stop with insulin pumps, the CPAP device, and whatever, home chemo. All of those things are accessible for blind individuals. The Americans with Disabilities Voting Rights Act is in play. This is an example of how, although we have tremendous successes through the passage of the Help America Vote Act back in the early 2000s, which made it law that accessible voting machines be in the polling places, we have to remain vigilant because everybody's attacking our right to an equal right to cast an independent ballot every day through ignorance, saying that it confronts security, and it doesn't. So we'd have to make sure that we continue to monitor that legislation and, if need be, pass additional legislation to reinforce those rights. The transformation to competitive integrated employment, which when I came on the national staff was the Fair Wages Bill, is just exemplary of the persistence of the National Federation of the Blind to do what's right. We've been fighting this since 1940. You see articles from Dr. Jacobus Timbrook opposing the Section 14C provision. You see resolutions passed by our organization in the 40s, and we've continued to fight it. And other people would have said, well, it's useless. You just can't do it. But if you look through our history, you see these incremental, rational improvements or advances toward eliminating this to the point now where just most recently they've posted a notice of public rulemaking that's going to finally move the Ability One program, which continues to assert that they're the largest employer of people with disabilities and have been synonymous with 14C since their existence. They're going to finally sever that tie, cut that umbilical cord, and stand alone as an entity, and hopefully maybe now we can get the Ability One program to do what they profess that they have been doing and provide competitive, integrated employment opportunities for people with disabilities without the use of subminimum wages. And you can get more information about these particular initiatives by visiting nfb.org/Washington-seminar. I gave John Perret, who's Executive Director of Advocacy and Policy Space, now I move to the space of blindness initiatives. This is where I work. This is the place where I live. And I love the fact that I'm working with such a dynamic staff to provide these programs, which I say provide services for blind people from birth to earth, from womb to tomb. And when I say we're providing it, that dynamic staff includes all of you. I know it may not seem fair that you don't get the salary and the benefits, the medical benefits, but you do get the benefits. We're able to conduct these programs because we incubate them at our national center, and then our affiliates and our chapters are the ones that really push it out throughout the rest of the country to make sure that it has an impact on blind people overall. Starting as early as working collaboratively with our national organization, the Parents of Blind Children, we operate programs that are early intervention to make sure those parents understand that it's important that they focus on literacy and travel for their children to be competitive as they mature. So we provide print Braille books through our Braille Reading Pals program that has print on one side and Braille on the other. And in that way, the sighted parent can read to their blind child. And as toddlers, they may not be reading that Braille, but they become familiar with that as a tool in their environment. And just as an aside, I use those tools to read to my son. So as a blind father, I was reading to my sighted son. I was reading the Braille. He was reading the print. And he was able to start reading at 2. It wasn't a tale of two cities, but he was able to sound out words and characters. And now he was able to graduate college. And we want the same to set the same expectation for our blind students. We also encourage our parents of blind children to recognize that desire for parents to put their children in quote-unquote safe environments, sit here, be still, don't touch anything, that's counterproductive to blind kids. We've got to encourage them to safely explore their environments because that's the only way they're going to get the information that they need in order to be able to move around independently. So through our Early Explorers program, we send them a little bitty white cane, and we're not expecting these toddlers to say, Mom, I'm going to go to the store, got to pick up some diapers, I'll be right back. But we do want to make sure that they understand that a cane is not a foreign object, that it's something that's natural. I've heard stories that blind students weren't given canes until they're graduating high school. That's ridiculous. That's like, I'm not going to give you shoes until you get your high school diploma. So let's make sure that we continue to support these programs and let them know that it's out there because they're free to the individuals that need that information. We want to make sure that the fundraising we do makes it possible for individuals not to have any barriers to participate in these programs. We continue to support the work that we do through our Bell Enrichment Literacy Through Learning. Most recently, we've augmented that with the in-home edition resulting from COVID. In 2022, we're hoping that we have a bridge between both in-person and virtual because we recognize the benefits. This is a silver lining coming out of COVID, that through our virtual Bell in-home edition, we've been able to access students that otherwise would not be able to participate in an in-person experience. But we do recognize that an in-person experience, there is no equal. Being able to have direct interaction between these blind students and successful blind adults, demonstrating the use of alternative blindness skills, because we don't just focus on Braille, we focus on travel, we focus on independent living, we focus on positive self-concepts and problem solving. And you can do that best when you're sharing that same space with these students. So we'll continue to build this bridge and benefit from the best of both strategies to make sure that blind students can get the services they need in order to be competitive with their sighted peers. There's a host of work that we do to make sure that the professionals have the tools that they need in order to provide a quality education. Our Teacher of Tomorrow program is helping teachers of blind students become better, highly qualified teachers. We'll be operating one specifically for Maryland that maybe we'll be able to model in states across the rest of the country. We do a lot of work in STEM. As a matter of fact, when President Rick Abono was the executive director of the Jernigan Institute, working under the direction of then-President Dr. Maurer, they recognized that STEM on the horizon was going to be providing the premier career opportunities for individuals. But we also recognized that many blind students were not being actively engaged in that STEM learning. You've heard stories of how when you're dissecting the frog, there's a person who's using the knife, there's a person that's pinning the organs to the chart, and then there's a person that's taking the notes. And we know which role the blind person would play, if that. So we challenged that. And I'll tell you, one of the most remarkable events that I've had the opportunity to participate in still remains that 2007, and we've had subsequent ones, but that 2007 NFBU Slam. We brought 200 blind kids in from across the country, partnered with Johns Hopkins University, and we had those kids building and launching rockets, dissecting sharks, doing nanoscience programming, robots building bridges. I mean, just shaking up the world with respect to what they thought that we could do. And then those kids go back to their school systems with an attitude. You know what I'm saying? I love that. So the next time they get relegated to being note taker, they're like, no, stand back, man. I've dissected sharks, you know? So I love that. We give them that gravitas. We give them that swagger, and we send them back with a sense of pride and confidence that's important. We're building our career mentoring program, which is kind of second nature to what you guys are doing. Your Freedom Link program, I think, continues to be an exemplary program that I wish other affiliates would adopt. But we've now been working in 4 states, most recently now with Illinois, to provide our career mentoring program to students in all of these states. And hopefully we'll be able to expand the services that you guys have been provided locally through Freedom Link to the whole state of Illinois. So blind students all around the state will hopefully be able to get benefits from that. So those were our education and employment programs, but we recognize that one of our strengths, and really necessary strengths, is access technology. So our Center of Excellence in Nonvisual Access Technology continues to house our International Braille and Technology Center, $2.5 million worth of access technology that's used by blind people every day to live, work, and play. In the past, if you visited, you've seen that a lot of it was Braille displays, talking computers, CCTVs, a lot of blind-specific technology. But because of our advocacy in supporting the development of universally designed accessible devices, more and more of them are becoming to the point where when people come to our International Braille and Technology Center, it's very much like them going into the Apple Store or the electronics area in Walmart, or because so many of those devices that we have made accessible to make sure that we can use them, overall society has recognized that they kind of like that too. So those Alexa devices and Google devices and the iPhones and the Androids, You know, those are the same out-of-the-box experiences that we, the devices that we get, the same out-of-the-box experience as everyone else does. So we continue to invite you to come and share in the work that you've done in building that. Speaking of building, we have our Blind User Innovating and Leading Design Program. People have always come to us for guinea pigs. Can you tell me where I can find some blind people to do this and do that? Why, yes. And unfortunately, they did that. They treated us like guinea pigs. But through our Blind Users Innovating and Leading Design, we make sure that when individuals, researchers, technology developers come to us for that resource of our lived experience, of our personal expertise, that we get compensated for it. So now we coordinate it in a way that makes sure the individuals who test this new device are compensated. Sometimes it's just a $25 gift certificate. That's still better than not being paid anything. But we've had people getting paid at least $500 in some instances for some of the experiences because we believe there's value in the expertise that we have. The accessibility switchboard continues to be a tool that we can onboard people around accessibility who don't have a real knowledge of technology. We continue to do also all sorts of work in our CENA, Center Excellence in Nonvisual Accessibility, and I encourage you to visit nfb.org/CENA to get more information about our trainings because we offer free monthly trainings on all things from using technology. We have one coming up this coming week, on workplace technology, so feel free to tune in. Just register for them and they're free. The other area that we focus on is our research area. And I'm sorry, can someone give me a time check? Am I good?
Sorry.
Okay, I have 4 minutes. Okay. So in the research area, we recognize that blind people, unfortunately, have been subjects to ableism when it comes to research. People think that when they research things, that they put it on a focus that takes care of us. I'll tell you one really quick example. We did a simple survey that just asked, and unfortunately, this survey was just for blind individuals, do you prefer to live at home or on your own? And the overwhelming number of people who answered the survey said at home. But when they start writing up the results of the survey, they said blind people choose to live at home because they can count on the natural support of their family. You know, no.
Ew.
I believe that if you would have asked that survey to anyone, specifically in this particular climate, people want to live at home because we recognize that there's value in family more than we ever have before. That there's a need for us to be together in order to stand for this thing that we're dealing with. So it's not a blindness thing. It's a human thing. We have to make sure that as people are doing research, that their bias around what they think we can or cannot do doesn't enter into what they publish as results. Because recognize that once it's published in that peer-reviewed article, people who are in the profession think that that's true. And that's why we created our own peer-reviewed publication, because that's what we do. We're going to shake up the world. You won't let us do it, we'll do it ourselves. So the Journal of Blindness Innovation and Research is our peer-reviewed research article. Magazine journal that makes sure we put information out there. And it's supported through the research that we host in our Jacobus Timbrook Library, and also supported through the work that we do supporting other advocates by promoting our Jacobus Timbrook Disability Law Symposium. So we continue to do those things in the area of research as well. I would be remiss if I did not take this time, because I could go down to talk about NFB Newsline, which offers over 500 publications to blind people in an accessible format. I could talk about the Independence Market, which provides tools and things that blind people use to interact and play in their homes. I could talk about the work that we do with the American Action Fund to provide Braille calendars to blind people free. We can talk about the stuff that we do for providing Spanish information. We could talk about the work we do with communications by promoting our Braille Monitor monthly publication, Future Reflections. Thank you, Debbie, for the work that you do with that quarterly publication for parents and students. I could talk about the Nation's Blind Podcast, which I helped put together and co-host with Melissa Riccobono. I could talk about our Voice of the Nation's Blind blog post, which echoes the information in that way. I could talk about our Imagineering, our future newsletter, which Patty coordinates. I could talk about all the host of press releases that we put out there talking about what we're doing in the realm of advocacy. I could talk about our social media presence on Twitter and Facebook and TikTok. I could if I had more time, but I don't. But I would end by saying this. We would not be able to do any of this in the way that we do it. Let me correct that. We'd be able to do it because we as an organization have always done it from the time that we started in Dr. Jacobus Timbrook's efficiency apartment with he and Hazel, where they had to put away the mimeograph machine in the closet just to let down their Murphy bed before they went to sleep. to the point now where we have a $30 million block of real estate in Baltimore, Maryland, all paid for, no debt, because that's where we operate in a real responsible way. But we're able to do so much more because of the funds that we raise. And I encourage you that if you're not a member of the PAC plan, which is a monthly committed donation to the organization, if you're not a member of our Dream Maker Circle, which leaves a legacy donation to the organization, if you're not actively involved in raising money for this organization, then I encourage you to become actively involved. Because it's through that financial support that we're able to leverage all of the love and energy that we have through our volunteer energy. And I hope that you will recognize that if you work to give more to the organization, you will recognize that the organization has more value as well. And again, I'll close with, I'm filled with hope, energy, and love by participating in the National Federation of the Blind, because every day my expectations are raised, my contributions make a difference to myself and to others, and in times like this, I can celebrate the achievements we've made with my Federation family. Thank you all for your time and attention.
Thank you so much, Anil, for that great presentation. Kinshuk Tella, if you have not made your
Door Prize.
Yes, Door Prize. So we will go over a few logistics. For those, if you are not in the room, we will go on to the next person, whether you are in the physical room or in the Zoom space room. If you are on Zoom and you win a door prize, please raise your hand so that we can acknowledge that you are in the room. Door Prize lady.
Yes, what an inspiring speech that was. That was fantastic. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to start this out with a bang right now for that wonderful speech and the beginning of a convention that I wasn't too sure what was going to actually be live at all or not. So we have $100.
Yes, please.
Courtesy of the Chicago chapter. So, I'm going to do the drawing the old-fashioned way. The old-fashioned, the shake-em-up way. Okay.
Shake-em-up, baby.
Shake-em-up.
Kinshuk, if you have made your way up to the podium. Okay, thank you.
Shake-em-up. And the lucky winner is...
It's pronounced Adil.
Phyllis Hampton?
Phyllis Hampton. I don't think she has made it to convention.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think she'll be here until later tonight.
Oh, okay. Well,
is she in Zoom land? Maybe she's in Zoom land.
Are you in Zoom land? No.
Phyllis Hampton, if you're in Zoom land, raise your hand. If one of the Zoom hosts, I know that Patty is outside of the room. Okay, thank you.
Okay,
all right,
then I guess unfortunately we'll have to go on, or fortunately,
right,
depending
was,
on
hey,
you, who you are. And
especially if it's me.
We're going to draw the next name. Okay, hopefully I'm pronouncing this correctly.
It's Anil. It's easy.
Oh, yeah, I know. Dula Jar.
She's a presenter. She won't be here until this afternoon, I don't think.
Boy, what am I doing here? Wow. Wow.
You're just a word,
baby.
Yeah.
I better get it together. Huh?
David Meyer would work just fine.
I know, Dave. I know you're here. Okay. All right. Let's try this one. I think this one might be around somewhere.
Yeah, right here.
Kathy Wright.
Cece.
Yay. Yay. So you will be receiving your, exactly how is this working?
You will contact our great state treasurer, Michael Nowitzki, to let him know how you would like to receive your payment, whether you would prefer a paper check or if you would prefer to receive your payment by Zelle.
I would like to receive the payment back to the organization.
Thank you, Kathy.
Oh, wow, how neat.
I think that was a general donation, Anil.
Toward the pie fundraiser, is that what you...
Let me make sure I hear that from Kathy Wright. Kathy, where did you want to donate your money? We have some various options. Don't let Anil encourage you. All right. All right.
Yay!
All right. Thank you. All right, thank you, Kathy Wright. We will move on in the agenda to Kinshuk Tella, who I am realizing is an emerging leader in our organization. If you all were here this morning to hear him speak about his success in the STEM field, and he is going to give the NAB student report. Thank you, Kinshuk.
Good morning, Illinois.
Good morning.
It's so great to be here. When I first found out that I was coming to Illinois from President Kulkarni, I was ecstatic. It's amazing to think that we're able to have in-person gatherings once again, and that we're able to do this because it's remarkable, especially the last year, how much we've overcome. I want to take a moment to thank everyone, thank especially the Illinois affiliate, to thank our national rep, Anil Lewis, as well as especially President Green for hospitality and support and making this happen, because a lot of conventions this season are going virtual, just like last year, and things remarkable that Illinois is able to put on a hybrid convention. It's not easy at all, so great job, everyone.
Hey.
I will be representing the National Association of Blind Students on behalf of President Trisha Kulkarni, who unfortunately could not be here. She wishes you guys all the best, and she is currently slaving away at her midterms at Stanford University. So all the luck to her as well. I want to first off say, or take and acknowledge, the accomplishments of our students. Within the National Association of Blind Students, we have students from across the country doing a variety of disciplines, a variety of fields, variety of career paths, and the past year has honestly been a roller coaster for everybody. We went from going fully remote to now we're going back in person. Current sophomores in universities are just now experiencing their campus in real life, in real time, and that's great and all, but along with that are a great deal of social and emotional challenges. It can be draining. It's so draining, emotionally and socially, going back to campus, dealing with in-person intercommunication with professors, faculty, peers, students, to advocate for yourself, not only over Zoom for classes, but also to students, to leaders, to your professors in person. It can be challenging and incredibly emotionally draining, but our students have persevered. Our students have been achieving great things. Every day I'm impressed, I'm amazed by what we've been achieving. From internships to career fairs, going to conferences, exploring themselves, emerging as leaders in their own communities and organizations. Our students in NABS have been doing great things, and so I want to acknowledge that as well. Now, the National Association of Blind Students, we are a community of students that work to level the playing field for blind students in regards to equipping them with the skills and advocacy and professional development, as well as community that will help them achieve what they would like to and live the lives that they want. Within NABS, we have a variety of programming and communities, including, we're not limited to, our national programming, which happens every year at our national convention. So looking forward to it in July at New Orleans. We'll be having our NABS annual programming. as well as we held regional seminars. Last winter, we had a national at-large seminar, virtually, of course, but it was amazing because we got to gather our efforts and have students from across the country come together and work on professional development and mentorship. This year, we will be having a Midwest seminar regionally in our very own Chicago in March of 2022. Within NABS, we have four committees. We have the fundraising committee, which works to promote fundraising efforts to build skills and planning communication, as well as providing experiences and real-life applicational job transferable skills. Our committee for fundraising works very hard to make sure that we can do what we do as NABS, as the National Federation of the Blind. We have our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, which our very own Sarah Luna here co-chairs on. Shout out to her. DEI works to explore the intersectionalities between identities that blind students have, whether it be being blind and in regards to race, gender, or even interests. They've been doing great work as far as exploring those different identities, as well as creating an inclusive and safe space for people of all kinds. In NAS, we also have our outreach committee, which works as our communication baseline. We produce our monthly NABS Now podcast, which is now amongst thousands of viewers and hundreds of followers. And we continue to put on amazing episodes that are geared towards helping students explore various paths that they can look into, as well as helping parents of blind children know what's out there for their students, their children. Additionally, we have our Legislative and Self-Advocacy Committee, which works very hard closely with the national office to educate students on their rights as students, as blind people, as well as promote self-advocacy and empowerment. As Mr. Lewis was saying previously, this month is considered Blind Equality Achievement Month. And so in regards to that, as NABS, we have put on programming. We held a national competition trivia fundraiser a few weeks ago, where we invited student divisions from across the country to come and compete in a trivia contest where we were also able to educate students on what BEAM means and what it stands for. That fundraiser was able to raise funds for our organization of movement, as well as raise funds for a student division that won the competition. So California, shout out to them for winning the competition. Also, with BEAM, our social media presence is growing and continues to grow. And within BEAM, we're launching this new Spotlight Saturdays initiative, which is geared towards highlighting and appreciating the efforts of students across the country through nominations. We are a community, and that is not just within our Zoom space or in-person spaces. We have social media presences with our Facebook group at National Association of Blind Students, as well as we produce monthly content in our blog post, which is released in the middle of each month. Our blog post highlights the past month's activity in NABS, creating a historical record for what's been going on in NABS for students to keep up on. And we also have, my favorite aspect of our outreach is our national listserv, where students can reach out on the listserv and ask for help or get guidance on whatever they have going on in their lives. It's a great discussion forum, lots of conversation, as well as promotions for various programming across the country, not just our national program, but also within student divisions. I want to quickly say that the National Association of Blind Students is a family, much like how the Illinois affiliate is, much like how the NFB is. We are all a family. And for students to be able to have our community as a support system means so much to me. I personally have gotten involved with the National Association of Blind Students almost 2 years ago now, and what drew me into it was the welcomeness of the community. One of my great mentors always says that every member of the NFB is a member of the membership team. It's all our duty to bring in people to the organization, to find leadership, to find active membership. And I strongly see that within our students here at this convention. I've been so inspired by the speeches given at this convention, and I believe that our community is growing and is thriving better now than ever. We are stronger than the pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you, Kinchuk. Sarah Luna, if you could start making your way to the podium. All right, door prize.
Wanted to make sure I didn't miss my opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I like to keep an agenda moving.
I'm a little slow here, I guess.
You're a little rusty. You'll get back into
the swing. Yeah, don't you worry about it. this one is from Dave and Teresa Meyer, and I know where they are. They're in Zoom land, but they're here in every other way. So this is fantastic. Ooh, $25. Wow. I want it. Let's see what we got here. Eddie Williams. Do we have Eddie Williams anywhere? Zoom.
Eddie Williams, are you in the Zoom room? I know he registered virtually. Eddie Williams in the Zoom room?
Anywhere and everywhere.
A Zoom host, can you tell us if Eddie Williams is in the room?
Not unless he's e-computer, which is the only one I can ID.
Okay, there's just an E. Okay. All right, door prize,
okay,
lady.
Okay, that's very unfortunate. Well, let's try this individual who I know, Howard Wilson.
Howard, are you in the Zoom room? I saw him last night. I saw Howard Wilson in the Zoom room last night. Maybe he's still tired from IAPS Idol.
Oh, my. Oh, don't tell me. Oh, how sad. Let's see what we have here.
I don't see him.
All right. Okay, I hope I'm properly pronouncing this. Natalio Abar.
Ah, shucks. Nope, he's not here yet. He's moderating the business owner panel shortly.
Boy, what am I doing here, huh? Guys.
You're saving it for me, Mary Lou. That's what
Holy
you're doing.
Holy moly, man.
And I appreciate it. I mean, if you want to wait for me to win $100, I'm happy.
Now, you guys, I'm shaking. Boy, am I shaking. You hear me in Zoom land? Shake, 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 shake.
Maybe
shake.
If we don't get this one, we'll just wait and pull two the next time.
No, come on now. Oh, Patrick Olson, are you in Zoom land?
Patrick Olson in Zoom land, are you there?
Yes.
Yay, we got one. All right, Patrick, please notify our treasurer, Michael Nowitzki, whether you would like to receive your payment by Zelle or by a paper check, and you can send an email to treasurer@nfbofillinois.org with that information.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, our next agenda item is another emerging leader in our movement, Ms. Sarah Luna. She is currently serving as first vice president of the Illinois Association of Blind Students. She is spearheading the PI fundraiser. she is a great friend of mine, and she is going to talk about her internship with the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois.
Hello, everyone. It's a thrill to be here with all of you today. So in the spring of 2021, I interned with the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois, and I'm here to share with y'all a bit about my experience. So I majored in history and communications at North Park University, and oftentimes I'm asked, well, what does communications mean as a field of study? And, well, that's a fair question, because it's very, very general. And for me, I enjoy communications because it explains the how and the why people engage with each other and the world around them. So it can include, like, the cultural influences that affect people's values, worldview, and communication style. It can delve into the media and how we all use the media and how we particularly use social media to engage with each other. So about a year ago, I was attempting to select my course schedule for what would be my final semester of my undergraduate career. And I was struggling because I had already fulfilled the major requirements for both my history and my communications major. And one of my academic advisors, who was familiar with my work in the affiliate, suggested perhaps pursuing a formal internship, as this would be a much more meaningful endeavor than simply taking a random course that I would not have been passionate about. And so I discussed the possibility with Patty Chang and Marilyn Green, and they were both on board with my interning with the affiliate. And so Patty graciously offered to be my internship supervisor, and we coordinated with Andrew Webb, and he would serve as my internship mentor. And my official title would be coordinate as a social media coordinator, as this was a role that was needed in the affiliate, and it would very much align with the values of my communications major. So after filling out a myriad of paperwork with my university and my academic advisor and various offices, my spring semester began as the social media coordinator for the Illinois affiliate. So a lot of my early work in the semester was spent observing how the Illinois affiliate previously utilized social media in terms of what information was distributed, what perhaps wasn't prioritized, what strategies were effective, and what was not. I also observed how other affiliates and the national offices utilize social media for observing the same strategies as well as to what was effective and perhaps what was not. And I took these observations and formed my initial action plans to begin developing content and distributing information and attempting to foster engagement. And I would refine these action plans as the semester progressed. And so these initial action plans included things like advertising events.
Excuse me, Madam President, is there a way of increasing the volume of the speaker, please?
As advertising events in a timely fashion, such as chapter meetings, committee meetings, presidential releases, and our very own state convention. Another priority was really increasing the use of photos and videos to really diversify the type of media we distributed and ensuring that this media was accessible through things like alt text and audio description for videos. I also really wanted to spotlight different committees so people could get a more broader scope of all the activities and initiatives and projects that our organization is engaged in. A final major priority was using our state and national publications such as the Braille Monitor, Future Reflections, the Illinois Independent to distribute important perspectives, share information, and perhaps even start conversations on relevant topics. Some minor projects I was engaged in were thanking our members of Congress for meeting with our delegation during Washington Seminar, and I utilized Facebook to reach out to around 50 community organizations that were based in different neighborhoods in Chicago, asking them to share a post that I created that gave information on who we are as an organization and welcoming people to take part. And so early in my semester, Patty connected me with the social media director and communications coordinator from the national offices, and I was able to meet with them to discuss media strategies, and this was a very informative meeting. It very much helped me with developing my action plans and assisted me with research into my major project for the semester. And so my major project was developing a communications plan for the affiliate to use once my semester concluded. And this this project very much challenged my skills in various arenas, most predominantly being research. I was familiar with doing historical research, thanks to my history major, but I wasn't really familiar with how to write a communications plan and how to best explain media strategies. So that was a very, very informative type of research that I was engaged in throughout the semester. The plan that I eventually developed was informed by my research, observations that I made from effective strategies from the national offices and other affiliates, along with strategies that I developed in my time managing the social media accounts. The strategies outlined in the communications plan were centered around informing current and future members of our state and national events, programs, and initiatives while encouraging engagement through social media and our various initiatives. Ultimately, interning with the affiliate challenged me to further develop my skills in writing, researching, project management, and media development. I would strongly encourage any students here who, if you believe you have skills or academic interests that could benefit the affiliate, I would strongly encourage you to pursue an internship with the affiliate. It was an incredible experience of which I am immensely grateful for. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Sarah Luna. So we are getting ready for our business owner panel. So while Mr. Pangier and Mr. Coleman make their way up, if they would like, otherwise we can get a mic to you all to do the panel from your table. And also I have asked Patty if Sabrina Simmons or Natalia Arbar have arrived in the Zoom room. But in the meantime, I will make a few announcements. Pi Palooza is still going on. You can talk to Sarah Luna or Glenn Moore to make your donation. $500. Dustin, Denise, Patty, Ellen, and I get a pie in the face.
For the Federation.
Yeah, for the Federation, whatever. Yeah, okay. Y'all lucky I love the Federation.
Kids, you know.
You know, y'all very lucky I love the Federation. The next item. The next item that I will remind people is at our banquet tonight, if you are here in person, there will be a cash bar from 6 p.m. till 11 p.m. The only time that the bar will be closed is when there's a presenter making a speech. I can't remember his name. But, you know, I'm sure it'll be good. I just can't remember the name right now.
He's going to be talking about the
Pi Palooza. Oh, okay. All right. So we have that going on, and actually right now, while we still check and see if our moderator and one of our business owners are in the room, also,
we're right here, so where would you like us?
If one could sit to my left and the other one sit to Anil's right, that would be great. Yes. Natalia Abar is the moderator. Okay. In the meantime, we're also going to do our first question. So get your phone. Okay, thank you. Get your phones out. And then after we do this vote, we will start the business owner panel. Remember, the phone number for voting this weekend is 217-439-3900. The question is, how are you attending state convention? How are you attending the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois State Convention? Type number one, if you are attending in person. Number two, if you are attending virtually. Again, the telephone number to dial into is 217-439-3900. And maybe, Mr. DJ, if we could have a little music while people are voting.
Marilyn, before we do that, can we remind everyone to eat that microphone? We're having some trouble hearing on the Zoom.
Okay, thank you. And
they can hear you, but some other people not.
Okay, I'm going to pass around my mic because I'm being told that I can be heard clearly. So I'm going to pass around my mic.
And tell them to get that mic really close, please.
Okay. Okay. Yes, you should get a confirmation text. Just like when we voted at National Convention.
I gotta get your information, man. Send me your information.
And Bridget Burke, once the votes are tallied, you can let us know how many are in person and how many are virtual.
Please keep voting, everyone.
Bridget has asked us to please keep voting. 217-439-3900. How are you attending this state convention? Type 1 for in person, 2 for virtual.
It's in front of me, but I'm just laughing.
How are we doing, Bridget, with the voting?
Well, we've had 17 votes registered so far.
Yay.
I have a feeling, though, that's a lot fewer people than are sitting there and that I can see here in the Zoom room. So we'll end this one now. Yes, so
thank you. I know I didn't vote. I'll be honest.
Okay.
Any moving parts.
Oh, somebody just voted. Good job. So 12 people are in person and seven now are virtual.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone who's here in Zoom and in the room. So we will move on to our business owner panel, which is being moderated by the second vice president of the Illinois Association of Blind Students, Mr. Natalio Abar. Natalio, if you would please unmute. And Sabrina, I will let Natalio introduce the panelists and go ahead with the panel. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. As Marilyn said, my name is Natalio Barr. I am the second vice president of the Illinois Association of Blind Students, and I will be moderating our first, if I believe I'm correct, business panel at the 2021 Illinois State Convention. And on this panel, we will have Sabrina Simmons, Steve Pangier, and Kenneth Coleman. So to kick this panel off, we're going to have a few questions that each and every one of the panelists will have a chance to answer. And the first of those questions, or topics rather, is to have each and every one of the panelists introduce themselves and give a brief description of who they are and what their businesses are and what activities that their businesses cover. So Steve Pangier, we can start with you. Each and everyone can just give a description of themselves and what their businesses entail. Steve Pangier, you can start with the first question.
Okay. My name is Steve Pangier. I'm from Crown Point, Indiana. I've been in the business for over 40 years. I have a general construction company as well as specialty. We do a lot of commercial work, especially in healthcare, in we've done a lot of restaurants, different retail. We also have a division in the industrial market, which mainly in the steel industry, which we have iron workers erecting steel. We have painters, and we have what we call metal roofing and siding, as well as laborers. And I'm third generation.
Nice. Okay. Kenneth Coleman, we'll go to you next. Same thing as Steve Pangier, give a brief introduction of yourself and your business and what it entails.
Hi, I'm Kenneth Coleman. My business is Only Music, and what we do is everything from producing music for television, radio. We also teach audio. We have started a new school that we're building on the west side of Chicago. I'm from the west side. And we're basically all about education, diversity, and inclusion. So I've had the company since 2006 when I moved back from living in Beijing, China, And so we are all about education and jobs for the handicapable.
Okay, great, great. And finally, Ms. Sabrina Simmons, same thing as Kenneth Coleman and Mr. Pangier, brief introduction of yourself and your business and what it entails.
Well, good morning, Illinois. I'm so thankful to be here. My name is Sabrina Simmons. I'm the owner of iLearn, where we learn to hear what others see. iLearn teaches technology to the blind. And more specifically, we have several programs that actually teach all the skills of blindness. Just this past July, we were the Jacob Balaton Award winners, and we're so happy to be here at the Illinois State Convention.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, now I'm assuming that there were a myriad of factors that contributed to you guys starting up your own business. What served as the main motivator or the main factor that convinced you guys that business owning or starting your own business was the way to go? Steve Pangier, we can start with you.
First of all, I want to thank Patty Chang for inviting me to speak here today. I've known Patty for several years, and I've got a lot of respect for her. Now, what motivated me? Well, when I graduated from college from Purdue University, I came to my father's office, and I was scheduled for an interview at another company. He said, stick around for a couple of days, help me out. Well, I stuck around, and I came in with my sport coat and tie, and the next day I took my sport coat off, and then the next day I was in the warehouse driving around or running around with the truck drivers to learn the business. I found it very interesting. I really didn't know much about the construction industry, but I got out there. I really loved it, seeing the different types of work we did, meeting a lot of the individuals. So call it from the ground up. At that time, I was legally blind. I could get around quite a bit. I didn't drive, but I worked out in the field. I mixed paint. I helped unload trucks. And that's where I learned. Finally, when I came into the office, I learned a lot of different things about safety, accounting, because I do have a minor in accounting. And then from then on, it really boomed. When I started, we had maybe 30 employees working in the field. And now today we have about 15 or 16 in the office and about 100 to 150 in the field. And I'm very proud to say what part of my business that I enjoy. We have so many different interesting jobs. We just finished building a 4-story stroke and rehabilitation center in Crown Point for Community Hospital. Our painters painted a Conseco field house in Indianapolis, which is the home of the Pacers. That was a very, very interesting job. So I can go on and on, but I don't want to take up too much time. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Pangier. Kenneth Coleman, how about you? What motivated you to start your business?
Well, what motivated me to start, I was living in Beijing, China at the time, and during my time there, they had hired me on to do some work and manage some clubs there. And they also knew I did recordings, and they asked me to come back with a recording. And I started thinking, if they want me to do this, I think I need to start a business and see can try my hand at this. I already knew the music business. I did multiple recordings. But as I went on, I learned more. Being in education and working with Chicago Public Schools and kids, I said, I think what I would like to do is be able to put young people to work. And so in the process of doing the project over in Beijing and then coming back here, I started to see that we needed to put young people to work and give them internships, but not only internships, but I believe in paid internships. Free labor is one thing, but giving people, paying them what they're worth is what I always believe in. So that's kind of what got me started in my field.
Awesome, awesome. And Miss Sabrina Simmons, what motivated you to start your own business?
So it's been about 10 years since losing my sight. And upon losing my sight, I went through the rehabilitation process and got all the skills of blindness back and found my love for technology and teaching others. I had relocated from Charlotte, North Carolina, back to Detroit, Michigan, and started to integrate myself into the blind community. And just as a volunteer, would teach people how to use their computer, their iPhone. And as soon as I could figure out a device like a Victor Reader, Trek, or Stream, would teach someone how to use that device. And so after doing that and attempting to go back to work, presenting my resume, having the skills that were needed for a particular job, and going through an interview process, initially getting that phone interview and it sounding promising, then getting a panel interview over the phone and that sounding promising, only to walk up to a building swinging my white cane and hearing the wind go out of someone as if to think, wow, she's blind. Like, I never knew that. Like, you could hear the question mark on their forehead. And so I started thinking about what the NFE has taught me about what, not what I can't do, but what is it that I can do? And so because of my passion and love for teaching, as I used to teach middle school math and science, among many other things, I contacted the state, my counselor, and asked about teaching technology. And coupled with my degree and my experience in teaching, I applied for to be a vendor as a technology trainer with the state of Michigan and went through that process. And that's what really birthed my business.
Nice, nice. Thank you, guys. Next question. I'm sure that there's being blind and being a business owner wasn't very easy. So what obstacles did you guys have to address before starting as well as even running your businesses? Steve Pangier, we'll start with you.
As I said before, I worked in the field for a while. Of course, my vision became progressively worse over time. But as time went on, I knew that eventually I would have to take over the company or start directing some things within the company. What was my biggest obstacle? It was to prove to myself, to my family, and my employees that I was capable of doing that job. I had to work harder than most people to learn it and earn the respect of my employees as well as my customers. And like I said, it's just, you have to be passionate about what you do. I never took no for an answer, and I know you've heard this before. Failure is not an option, and that's how I am. I'm not going to take no. I'm going to be the best that I can be, and I believe that I've earned that respect from our employees and our customers. And I get out there. I don't know how to explain this, but I don't feel I'm blind. We're not different. We just do things differently. Okay.
Great. Kenneth Coleman.
I have to agree with Steve. That's kind of how I was. I had started, of course, my career started as a musician, and with starting my business, I just never took no for an answer. I started looking around to see what kind of contracts I could get with doing the type of work that I do. And I was lucky enough to land a contract with the Board of Education with doing, working with after school matters, and also work with doing some Black history programs in Chicago Public School, and that's kind of how we started. But I never thought I could not do it. There was never an option about saying I can't. I said the old saying, yes, we can. So that's how I approached it. And even the people that work for me, this is how we look at it. We've been blessed with the work with the city of Chicago as we are looking to build a school on the west side of Chicago for technology. And we are just looking to employ some of our people from the NFB, that people who are looking to work in the industry of television, radio, and audio. And so, no was not an option.
Perfect response. And finally, Ms. Sabrina Simmons, what obstacles did you have to address before starting your business?
So when I think about the obstacles, one of the biggest obstacles for me was the Michigan.gov website, because that's where I had to start to even form my LLC and to get the business legalized. And that website is a beast, even for the sighted. So just navigating that website was one of the biggest challenges for me. And again, just like the gentleman stated, both of the gentlemen stated, no was not an option. I sat in the convention in 2015 for the very first time. And in that convention, I remember Pam Allen saying with love, hope, and determination that you can do anything. And we do, as the NFB term, dreams into realities. And this was a dream for me, and it has become my reality.
Perfect. Next question. Now, the number one thing with being blind and visually impaired and going into the employment world, you face a lot of job discrimination and just discrimination in general, and which leads me to ask, how do your employees and customers respond to your lack of vision? And how are you perceived as a blind business owner? Mr. Pangier, we'll start with you.
I think, after a while, you earn the respect of not only your employees, but your customers. Now, have I run into a situation where I feel that because of my blindness, that we were not given a job? Yes, it happened to me twice. And at one time we were negotiating a job with a customer. It was to put up a building, industrial building. And when I was at that meeting, they noticed that I was blind. I was a person who was blind. And after our meeting, we asked, what else can we do, or what other opportunity is there? Do we have a chance for the job? And the gentleman that owned the company said, I don't know if we want to deal with you because we don't understand if a blind person can run a construction company. I just said, okay, thanks, walked out and said, that's the way it is. Now, that happened to me twice. I don't believe, maybe it's happened other times, where I wasn't told, but I will say that doesn't matter to me. We are successful in what we do. We're not going to get every job. And you know what? I always say that guy has rocks for brains, okay? So anyway, that's how I feel about it. I don't think that it's been a problem, and I don't care. I'll just go out there and keep fighting for the jobs that we want.
Perfect response. Kenneth Coleman, how about you?
Well, I will say I haven't had too much of a problem working as a musician starting out. My friends, what they built my confidence is like, I would say, well, did you tell them I'm blind? They said, do you know the material? I said, yes. They say, it doesn't matter. Show up for the job. And that's when I learned to stop asking and just show up and do the job and let them see that I could do what was called for. So as a musician, I've had the privilege of working with a lot of great people. And with work starting my company, we kind of take that same approach about I don't tell them that I'm blind. I walk in, I'm like, they'll see that I'm blind once I walk in the door. And I have had a great success rate with the people that I've worked with. And like Steve said, for the ones that didn't hire me, you know, I really didn't care because that wasn't a job for me. If their foresight is that limited, then that's not the people I want to work with. So that's kind of how my business has been, and we've done well. And, you know, just to piggyback off of Steve, that, again, that's just kind of how we look at things. If it's you're not hired, then for me, that's just not the people I want to work with.
Awesome, thanks. And Sabrina Simmons, same question.
So my clients are inspired. Oftentimes I'm met with someone who has recently lost their sight, and they come into the office and may have been told to reach their hand out to me. And I'm reaching my hand out to them, and then I say, where's your hand? And they said, oh, you're blind. Absolutely, I am. EyeLearn is not only are we teaching the blind, but we are blind. The staff, the complete staff is blind. So every teacher understands what someone may be going through, and we understand emotions and feelings behind blindness, but we encourage everyone to truly just stand and hold their heads up high, and that they can learn and do anything that they want to do. And so even to some of my sighted customers who don't know the computer and have learned the computer, they truly feel inspired by what I am doing.
Awesome. Okay.
Excuse me, Natalia.
Sure, yes.
We are running out of time on this presentation. So if you'd like to wrap up, or I can go ahead and wrap up for us so that we can move on to our next presenter.
Okay, sure. First, I want to thank everybody, Steve Pangier, Kenneth Coleman, and Sabrina Simmons for doing this panel. And it's been great speaking with all of you. I hope you guys have a good day. And Marilyn, you can take over.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pangier, Mr. Coleman, and Ms. Simmons. I have been told that this is the first time that the affiliate has offered a business owner panel, so I'm very interested in getting feedback from people after convention. If you'd like to see us do this again next year at convention.
Yes, and yes.
Okay. I hear multiple yeses in the room. I hope the same as from the Zoom room. But yes, please email me. I'm already starting to think about next year's convention, so I hope that you all will start to think about it too. What type of programming you'd like to see. I hope that it invites you to think about what you want to see as we continue to strive to live the lives we want. Maybe having these presenters back, maybe throwing some others into the mix, learning about different avenues of entrepreneurship that we are pursuing as blind individuals. So thank you all for being here. I am sure that these presenters would be happy to talk to you along the weekend. If you would like contact information for Sabrina Simmons, I can provide that. Ms. Simmons and her organization are offering computer training for our affiliate leaders, so we are very much looking forward to that. So thank you all for that great presentation. And we will now move
on. Door prize.
Door prize, okay.
Door prize. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Do it quick. This is donated by Jillian Walker. I was just going to say, yay. $25 big dollars. All right, everybody, get ready. Get ready. Get ready.
I got my hand out and I'm waiting, Mary.
I know you are. Well, somebody's going to think this is a little thick, maybe. Pat Olson.
Pat Olson? All right. All right, so Pat Olson, you can let Michael Nowitzki know how you would like to receive your payment.
I did. Honest.
So, Pat, if you can let Michael know if you prefer a paper check. Okay, how would you like to donate it, Pat? Okay, general donation to the affiliate, is that correct? All right, thank you so much, Pat. All right.
May I say just one other thing, Madam President, really fast. That panel was so inspiring, as I am a blind entrepreneur, and some of us were in the vending program. There are, you know, members of this organization that are. And so that was really inspiring. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So our next presenter, it holds something special to me. The name of the presentation is Let's Read Together. It will be Joe Natale, who is the Deputy Director of the Illinois State Library. As many of you know, I have spent the last 20 years working in a public library setting, so I'm very happy to have Mr. Natale come here and to speak about the programs that they offer at the Illinois State Library, and hopefully Mr. Natale will have some time at the end for a few questions from the audience. Mr. Natale, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I'm going to kind of bring you up to date on the program. I kept getting confused when Natalia was talking because I thought you were talking to me. But anyway, I'm the Chief Deputy Director here at the State Library. And since the first of the year, I've been the interim manager of Talking Book and Braille Service. Sharon Ruda retired, and one of my jobs here is whenever an associate director leaves, I sort of fill in and supervise the staff until a new director is hired. Now, I've worked at the State Library for over 30 years, and my experience with the program has primarily been sharing an office with the two previous Talking Book directors, Neil Kelly and Sharon Ruda. So I learned a lot by osmosis, and one thing I have learned that this program is very important to the people who use it, and the people that use it aren't shy about expressing their opinions on what kind of service they want and deserve. I want to talk about the pandemic, because we were closed from March 16th to June 1st, 2020. And we had a meeting before we closed and discussed whether we should shut down the TBBS service. And since, you know, the pandemic was relatively new and no one knew the extent of it and how it would impact, and we had heard that around the country, the other Talking Book centers were closing, so we decided we'd close too. But the little voice in the back of my head said, you know, I don't think this is going to work out well. And it didn't take long. We left phone messages that we were closed, but people just kept calling and calling and calling. And something else that happened, that while no mail, no books were being sent out, they were still coming back in. And over the course of time, we had about 27,000 cases that we had to get back on the shelf and get ready to be circulated again. So what we did is, for about a week, we brought in the circulation staff to clean up those cassettes and plastic cases and return them to the shelves. And also to keep the number of people, even when we partially opened, to keep the number of people down in the building, our readers' advisors worked from home. And during this time, the Secretary of State, Jesse White, his executive office, asked the directors of all his departments to come up with a continuation of operations plan. So if a pandemic or a disaster or anything happened to interrupt service, we had to identify the essential services that would continue. So we identified two essential services. One was the fiscal office because we have to pay bills and issue grants. But the other one was we're going to keep the Talking Book Center open and keep the books circulating. So that's a bit of good news. Something else that the federal government, our funding agency, the Institute for Library and Museum Services, they had some studies done on how long the virus stays on the surface of books and magazines and things we handle. And they found that the virus lasts longer on those plastic containers that the talking books come in. So for a while, we were quarantining those books when they came in from the post office for 5 days. We let up on that not that long ago, but then when that Delta variant started up again, we started quarantining the material. But we should be lifting that soon again. We've also had, and I had to explain to people when they called, because they were pretty upset that we closed the service because one, we wanted to protect the users, you know, if you know, we're sending out contaminated items. And the other one is, you know, to protect our staff. And even since our staff has come back, we've had some of the circulation staff has been out with COVID or exposure to COVID. Everybody's well, but it's just something we're contending with all the time. As for the fiscal operation, it's important for the talking book community because we fund the radio and information service, and we have to get those contracts out to them on a timely basis so they can keep broadcasting. Now, related to that, in Springfield, the University of Illinois at Springfield was providing the radio and information service, because of budget issues, they've stopped doing that. So Mind's Eye, that's based in Belleville, and then the broadcast in that area are also going to be broadcasting in Central Illinois. And they're going to use their volunteer base of 135 readers to record local content, for the St. Louis, Belleville area, and also for Springfield. And long-term, they plan to recruit some volunteers in this area, and they're going to reach out to and create partnerships with the Veterans Affairs groups, long-term care facilities, and the School of the Blind in Jacksonville. Another item that's come up, last spring, Patrice Johnson from the Chicago Public Library contacted us about the possibility of Chicago becoming an advisory and outreach center to provide talking book service to Chicago patrons. They used to be a regional years ago, and that ended, but we've worked with them. We've also given them an additional grant so they can get some programming done by Keystone and to purchase a mini scribe. They're gonna make an announcement later this year about opening in that service to the Chicago area. This helps us a lot because it lessens the burdens on our readers advisors. We've fluctuated in that between 2 and 4 during the last year or so. There's just been a high turnover, but this circulation will still continue through Springfield. And I think one final note, we do get calls about the postal delivery, and we really don't have much control over that. So call your congressman. The trucks come every day and they drop off and pick up material, but then after they leave, we don't know the time schedule that things are arriving. So, you know, we hope it all works out well. And we're looking forward to copying on demand. We're waiting for some scribe machines. We have 50,000. We have a bunch of the CD, the thumb drives to put the material on. So we hope that that'll be starting soon. That'll change some of our workflow for employees, but I think it'll be less labor intense at like shelving cassettes now. So that's where we're at the state. If there's any question.
Thank you, Mr. Natale. Are there questions from the Zoom room? If you have a question from Zoom, please raise your hand. If you're using the telephone, star 9. If you're using a Mac, I believe it's Alt Y or Alt Command Y. I don't use a Mac, so someone help me out. If you are using a Windows computer, it is Alt Y, I believe. Yep, okay, thank you. So are there any questions for Mr. Natale in the physical room or in the Zoom room?
I have Dan Cavaldi.
All right, I have a question from Kathy Randall, and then who else? I think Patty was, okay, Debbie Stein. Oh. I'll get someone to run a mic. I might end up running the mic because I need to walk around anyway. Okay, all right, thanks. Glenn is gonna run the mic, so it's Kathy Randall first, then Debbie Stein, and then we'll do one of the Zoom people and then go from there. Oops, sorry.
Okay, just a second.
Glenn, thanks. I am so glad the Reader's Advisors are back. And I appreciate getting the books. I really am so glad that we're getting them regularly. But if you're going to start with radio reading service extensions, I much prefer Newsline. I don't care for radio reading service. For one thing, my machine in Jacksonville couldn't even pick up the Springfield whatever that over the radio. It was just frequency. It was just staticky. It didn't work well. And Newsline is so marvelous. I prefer Newsline. So thanks for the books. Love the books. Please let's press Newsline over radio reading services. Glenn?
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that because Newsline discussion of that comes up quite a bit. And I can tell our director that there is support for that.
Was Jamal next?
Debbie Stein.
Oh, Stein. Where are you, Debbie?
Oh. Hi, thank you. I'll echo what Kathy says about loving the program. It's been part of my life since I was 9 years old. But I understand that there is a national program to make available a Braille display that can be used to read the Braille books in the NLS collection and also perhaps to download Braille titles from other sources such as Bookshare. Is Illinois yet in that pilot program, and how is it possible for Illinois library patrons to get their hands on one of these Braille displays?
Illinois wasn't part of the test, the pilot, but the pilot is coming to an end. And what I'm hearing is then it's going to be available nationwide. And then we would let people know that they can order it. But if you're interested in that, you could send me an email and I'll be sure that, you know, you get on we're maintaining it. It's not a lot of people, but we do have a list. So we're kind of keeping track of who's interested.
Can you give us all your
Braille
email
now
address,
from
please?
Utah?
Mr. Natale, is it okay if I give your email address to those who are
interested? Sure.
Okay, I can send it later. Those who are interested can email me at president@nfbofillinois.org. And I can send you Mr. Natale's email address. I know Debbie Stein is interested. So Debbie, don't worry about sending me an email. Okay. But anyone else, I will, you know, send it to president@nfbofillinois.org. We have, according to Patty, one of our Zoom hosts, Dan Tavaldi has his hand raised, and Dave Meyer. So we'll go to Dan, then we'll take a question in the room, and then we'll go to Dave Meyer.
Thank you. Quick question.
when I looked into participating in the pilot and I got confusing information about becoming a Braille patron, I use the Bard service to download Braille books. I don't borrow hard copy books. And one person I spoke with, I forget if it was in Utah or here, adamantly told me that I couldn't get an e-reader unless I borrowed 3 books. And I spoke with someone else and explained why I don't borrow hard copy books, and they said that wouldn't be an issue. So I got all kinds of conflicting information depending on who I spoke with.
And honestly, I'm getting conflicting information too. So send me an email and I'll see what I can do.
All right, thank you very much.
And while you're sending emails, everybody, if you know anybody that might be interested in being the associate director of Talking Book and Braille Service, send me that name too.
All right, Jamal Powell, if you could run the mic to Jamal, and then we'll take Dave Meyer's question.
Okay, thank you very much. Welcome, Mr. Natale, and I wish you well. With all that being said, I got 2 questions. Number one, how many nowadays centers folks have that distribute the hard copy talking books nowadays? Because I know it was 2, then it was 3, now it's 1, then it's 1, so I'm just curious about that. And number 2, I'd like to echo what a couple of my other colleagues say. Radio reading services, while they're a nice service, and I was a part of one for a few years, but when Newsline came, I've been a Newsline subscriber for a long time, and I think it is time to really go back to encouraging people to use NFB Newsline.
Okay. I'll relay that. I believe we're the only ones that are checking out the hard copy Braille. I don't know. I don't know if Chicago's doing that or not. But I know we are. And I don't think the library systems in the state used to, but you know, it all got consolidated.
And I can answer for Chicago. No, Chicago Public Library is not. I don't know if there's another institution in Chicago, but I can speak for Chicago Public Library as an employee. We do not. We have some Braille items, but it's a handful. And you have to go to your nearby public library location and get it from that exact location. You cannot request it as of now through the whole system. If that was it, Jamal, we will move on to Dave Meyer. All right, Dave, were you seeking the floor to ask Mr. Natale a question? Are there any other questions in the room before we move on to our next presentation? All right, hearing none, thank you so much, Mr. Natale.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I learned a lot, and I'll share this information, and we're just going to keep the service going.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to continuing these conversations with you. You are welcome to stay around and listen to all that we have to offer in the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois this weekend. Thank you for coming.
Door prize. And this one is given from our fantastic Bill Reed from Springfield and Chicago and all kinds of other places. Bill Reef has donated $25, and here we go.
Marco gave me another. Thanks. Sorry.
Oh boy, I know he's definitely here and in person. Michael Nowicki.
Michael. So, Michael, send an email to yourself. Right. You know, don't get confused, but, you know, if you want to send it to the state president, my email address. All right. Eudora Prize lady. But don't forget to call my name. I'm here. I'm walking around.
Oh, you're there.
All right.
You're there.
All right.
I said you're there. That's what I said.
Thank you. So our next agenda item is Ingrid Halverson in the room. I know she was in here about 20 minutes ago in the Zoom room.
I'm here.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Halverson. So our next presenter, we have met at numerous times through our state conventions. She and John Gordon, who are the Bureau Chief of Blind Services, they have come to multiple conventions. We thank them so much for their time and participation each and every year, whether they cannot come themselves in person. They always send a representative, so thank you so much. Ms. Halverson will speak about accessing blindness services in the state of Illinois. And we hope, Ms. Halverson, you can stay around and provide time in your presentation for Q&A. Thank you. I leave the floor to you.
Thank you. Yes, I look forward to any questions that you may have after I give my presentation. And in fact, I kind of counted on that, so I really don't have a lot prepared. I want to go through a couple things. One is the eligibility determination process for vocational rehabilitation services. And it's a two-part eligibility process. So if an individual has either SSI or SSDI based on their own disability and wants to work in the future, that person is eligible for our services. The next step, though, is what's kind of the tricky part, and that's the order of selection. Our state is under, all states are under an order of selection. Fortunately, our state is open. So all of our categories of disability are open to receive bulk rehab or VR services. And what the order of selection does is looks at the individual's medical, I don't want to say medical, let's not say that, looks at the person's disability and determines how that condition impacts that individual in terms of getting employment. And we look at seven different categories. Those categories are mobility, self-care, self-direction, work skills, work tolerance, interpersonal skills, and communication. So if an individual's disability impacts them in terms of employment in one or more of those categories, and they will benefit from bulk rehab services, they're eligible for our services. Okay, those are the SSI, SSDI people. Let's say a person does not have SSI or SSDI, then we can use other resources to gather the information we need to document that indeed there is a disability. So those avenues are either, let's say somebody went to ISVI, Illinois State School for Visually Impaired. Well, you have to be blind or visually impaired to go there. So when we see that you went there, that is enough to say, yeah, this person has a visual impairment. Let's say you have an old, you know, eye exam. Let's say you have a 504 plan from school or an IPE from a mainstream school or previous doctor reports. We can use that to document the disability, and then we go into the order of selection just as we do for people who have SSI or SSDI. So that's the eligibility determination process. The federal government gives the state 90 days from the time of referral to the eligibility determination. So that's quite lengthy. John and I both do not want to see that taking that long. We want to see our counselors and our coordinators serving people as quickly as possible. So, you know, with that being said, if there is a concern with timeliness of services with Bureau of Blind Services, please reach out to me and I will address it. Now, when I say that, of course, I need to have the individual who has maybe that concern or their guardian. If another person wants to advocate on their behalf, then I need a release of information signed by the customer, okay? So some really cool and exciting things that we're doing right now. We have a contract with NFB to provide pre-employment transition services for students who are blind and visually impaired. And I'm very, very, very excited about this. This gives us an opportunity to work with young people between the ages of 14 and up until the age of 22 now because of the new law in Illinois to provide pre-employment transition services. And those services are designed per the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, WIOA, to help these young people acquire the skills that they need to move on to all different aspects of their life. Yeah, so it's job exploration counseling, it's work-based learning experiences, offering services on counseling on post-secondary education, workplace readiness counseling and experiences, and instruction on self-advocacy. So again, we want to work with NFB to find these students with disabilities, which can be kind of tricky. So your assistance, anybody's assistance in referring these young people to us is very much appreciated. The caveat is the young person must be in an educational setting to receive pre-employment transition services. So it can be either a high school setting or a college setting, as long as they're in an educational program between the ages of 14 and 22, okay. We continue to work with our VOC rehab customers, and I don't wanna say adult services because really our youth services and our adult services follow the same federal and state regulations, except for the PTS, the pre-employment transition services. But when we're working with people who are not in PTS, we are working to help individuals obtain the skills that they will benefit from to become self-sufficient and employed and independent. We are always looking for referrals. So, send people who you know our way. We have a directive from our director Patrick, to respond to people's contact within 48 business hours. We really want to adhere to that. Again, if something slips through the cracks, if someone doesn't get a response, please reach out to me and I will address it with that staff person. We did have in fiscal year 21, an increase in our referrals, so that is good. We did reduce our wait time from referral to plan by 50 days, so I'm rather proud of that. And we were supposed to get a score of 62 in our measurable skill gains for Rehab Services Administration, our federal funder, and we got 82%. And what that means is that when we have someone going to post-secondary education, that we track their grades and we show that there is progress being made. So we're at 82% for all of our customers who are attending post-secondary training, and it shows that they're doing well. So that's a really good thing. We are looking at ways to make our documents more accessible to people who read Braille and JAWS. It's a bit of a struggle, but we are really dedicated to working this out with DHS and with DOIT. So if there's ideas that can be put into place with all of the challenges that the state gives us, we will definitely do what we can to work those out. Let me think. See, we're still working on a hybrid status. That means that we are working out of our homes or in the field. We are not working out of our offices as of yet. We have 12 providers who are offering older individual blind services across the state. And those are services to people who are 55 and older and are not interested in voc rehab services. We also have three contracts with Centers for Independent Living and other agencies that provide similar services to people who are 18 to 54 who are blind and do not want voc rehab services, but would need some of those independent living skill services. And we have three contracts for the independent living type of services for people who are deafblind. Let's see, I think that is probably about, staffing. Our staffing, we are working with personnel to fill our vacancies. The region, the state is broken down into five different regions, and region two, which is like Lake, Lake County, Will County, kind of the top half of the state and all the way over to the west, okay? We are still struggling in finding counselors for that region. We just hired a counselor, about 5 months ago, but we still need two more counselors in that region. And we are working with personnel also to hire more rehab instructors and O&M specialists. So that is it. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Halverson. So we will take questions from the convention floor. If you are in Zoom, please raise your hand, star 9, to get the attention of the Zoom host, or Alt Y. If you are in the room, holler out your name and a mic runner will come to get your question. All right, Bill Reif. Glenn, do you mind running the mic again? Okay, thanks. While Glenn is running the mic to Bill, are there any other questions in the room or on Zoom so that I can acknowledge?
Kathy Randall after Bill.
Thank you, Kathy. And then Jamal, okay. And I'll see if there are any hands up. I'm sorry? Okay, so we will wait. So it's, first is Bill, then Kathy, then Jamal.
Yes, I wanted to begin by commending efforts to increase staffing levels, counselor caseloads have been a concern for a long time, and so it's good to see progress on that. The Bureau for the Blind has been tremendously understaffed, as has the Business Enterprise Program for the Blind, and there have been efforts on that front as well. But I, my question concerns another topic, another matter of concern. We have discussed with the director for really a period of a few years now. In fact, the department, the Bureau had talked to us regarding preparation of a handbook. The purpose of this handbook, well, a couple purposes. It's if people are to have informed choice in mapping out their future and what services they need to know what's available. And they also need, of course, to know what rights and responsibilities, and in particular, how to challenge a determination with which they disagree. To my knowledge, such a handbook is certainly not being disseminated. I don't know whether it exists or not. What is the current status of that?
So thank you, Bill, for your comments and support of hiring more staff within BBS. I do want to talk a bit about BEPB, and thank you for that reminder. I honestly was not made aware of the request to have a handbook. I think it's an awesome idea, and I will put that on my to-do list, on the top end of my to-do list, so we can get that out there. I think, you're right. How can somebody be informed and really active in their planning if they don't know what services could be available to individuals. You know, the one thing that I think we need to make clear is that our services are individualized. Yeah. So what may be appropriate and right for one person may not be for the other. And I know, you know, I hear often like, well, how come so-and-so got this and I didn't, right? Well, it's because maybe so-and-so's family didn't have funding available to them and you do. So I will work to put this handbook together. And Bill, you said we, so I don't know who we are, but if you can let me know who the we are, then, you know, we can put up a draft and then run it by our constituents to see if this kind of like meets the needs.
Okay. When I speak of we, I'm actually clear back to when Betty Odom Davis was director. Certainly, you know, we within the Federation, and I believe also the Blind Services Planning Council, have discussed this with John Gordon. It's a topic that's come up, and I know that John is aware of this handbook or the need for it. I believe it is a document that exists in most states and is at least recommended in RSA requirements.
Yeah.
Or guidelines.
So the DRS, the Division of Rehab Services, has a document that provides some of this information and definitely provides the rights and responsibilities. I am, you know, we could be handing that out or sharing that with our blind and visually impaired customers. I'm not sure about the accessibility. So I will look at that and then work to make sure that that's a purposeful document for blind and vision impaired individuals.
Okay, and in that regard, if there is a document that either exists or is under development, I hope that the department can collaborate with the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois to make sure that services we offer either locally or on the national level would be included in that handbook.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't want to take up all the time. So Bill, would I share this with Marilyn and with Sharon, Marilyn Green and Sharon Howerton, and then those women could get them out to their respective groups?
Ms. Halverson, if you have time, we did have two more questions. Please, Kathy Randall and Jamal Powell, if you could make them quick, and then
okay.
We could move on to our next agenda item to respect Ms. Halverson's time, but also to respect the time of the next presenter. But I do want to acknowledge your questions from the floor.
Thank you, Marilyn. Ms. Halverson, can clients of the department apply and go to NFB training centers for their rehab if they would rather do that than go to ICRI would?
Yes. We would have to take into consideration their financial situation because that is a cost service. So if they have the financial resources, then they would have to pay for it. But we do provide funding for those who do not have the financial resources to go to those.
So right. Even if their taxes are paid every year, I mean, could part of it, if I paid for, I went to ICRI Wood, which was IVHI when I went, it's been that long ago, and then went to CCB and paid my own way. And the difference was incredible. I loved what I learned a lot at CCB.
Uh-huh.
And that's being pretty blunt, but I'm blunt. But anyway, if your customers can apply and get some funding to go to an NFB training center, that will be followed through and they'll be allowed to take that training if they want to?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Glenn, thank you very much.
Jamal Powell, Glenn is running the mic.
Jamal, I'm coming your way.
Can we remind people to get that mic close? Like, we could hardly hear Kathy and Bill at all on the Zoom.
And please, there's some conversation, it seems like, going on around, so that might be part of it. Please keep your in-person conversations to a minimum.
Okay, Madam President, I got a question for Ms. Howerson. It's about the contractor's contract with the Bureau. What mechanisms does the Bureau have to monitor the contractor's progress and making sure that the contractors are doing what they're supposed to do to make sure the clients are successful and have successful outcomes?
Oh, Jamal, that is a really complicated question because we have so many different kind of contracts. So are you talking about...
I'm talking about the contracts that that the Bureau for the Blind directly allocates with all their vendors, whether it's for the vocational rehab part or the section that deals with 55 and older.
Sure. So we follow the federal and the state guidelines. And if you want to reach out to me, because I know my time is like almost up, right? I'd be happy to share with you those guidelines. But we do have annual on-site visits with the contractors. And we do have like the 70B federal report with RSA for that contract. So we do follow the state and federal guidelines.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Halverson, for your time. We appreciate the work that you and Mr. Gordon do.
Thank you.
We invite you. I'm sorry, Anil.
Lewis.
Yes, Anil.
I wanted to say before Ingrid left, as I mentioned earlier in the national report, we've recently started contracting with Illinois to provide the career mentoring program here. And she has been a tremendous internal advocate for our programming. One of the hardest parts and the reason we haven't been able to expand to other states is the administrative burden in configuring the services that we offer to kind of the regulated requirements that RSA puts in place. And we recognize that's been a tremendous hurdle. And Ingrid, I just wanted to tell you publicly, we appreciate you really doing your due diligence, making sure that you're able to do what you require to by law, but also create an opportunity for us to provide this dynamic programming to blind transition youth in Illinois. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Anil.
And of course, Ms. Halverson, you are welcome to stay for more of the convention. We welcome you to hear more about our programming. If you are open to the idea, I can definitely keep your email address and send it out on an as-needed basis to people who are interested in learning more about services.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to stay on and please give my email address to every single body.
All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Halverson.
Thank you.
All right. Our next agenda item is I marked the spot. John Hill. He came to a few chapter meetings when I was president of the at-large chapter. Very much an energetic gentleman, such as I've been told about myself. I have become Facebook friends with him. I saw recently that he has been doing archery, and he has been competing. I thought that this would be a great agenda item to, again, show blind people living the lives that we want, being interactive and active out in our communities. John Hill, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah. And also, John, if you want to save a little bit of time for Q&A, you're welcome to do that as well.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate it. So it was a little over a year ago in September of 2020. I'm part of the Educational Center for the Visually Impaired here in Springfield, Illinois. And we received a recreation grant from the Community Foundation. And one of the individuals that's in our group recommended that we try archery. So in September of 2020, we did a five-week archery class at Rigney School of Archery here in just south of Springfield. And during that time, I learned that it doesn't matter if you're blind or visually impaired, you can do archery. And it sounds sort of crazy, but you can. Archery is not only an individual sport, but it can also be a team sport. And
Excuse me, John, you're starting to break up.
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
You're starting to break up some.
Can you hear me now?
It's a little distorted. Say okay. something now, please.
Hello, are you there?
Okay, so yes, so far so good. Okay, sorry about that.
Okay.
Continue.
That's okay. That's okay. So I took the 5-week class and then started then I continued with it because I really enjoyed it.
Do you have your video on, John, maybe?
Yes. Do I need to shut that off? There you go. Is that better?
It will probably help your bandwidth, I'm being told. So if you want to turn off your your video and
there you go.
It'll help. Okay,
it
let's
shut
see how
off.
It goes.
Okay, all right, perfect.
Thank
so
you.
I enjoyed the 5-week class that we had, and I decided to stick with it. Finding out that archery is not only an individual sport, but it's also a team sport that you can do, and you can select which way you want to go. Through that, I started shooting in what's called a pin shoot, which is through USA Archery, which is an achievement program where you go through and you work to gain to achieve higher levels, and you get pins for each level that you hit. And then I started competing in tournaments. So in August, August 8th of last year, I shot in the Illinois Target Archery Association's Illinois State Championship. I won my division, plus I set the state record for that. And then at the end of the August, we had the inaugural para archery championship here in Illinois through Northside Archery Club up in Chicago. It was at Dunbar Park, and I ended up winning that division as well. I broke my state state record, but unfortunately it didn't qualify for the state record because it wasn't a state state sanctioned event. Going through this whole process, I've met quite a few people, and one of the things that was brought up was the idea of doing the Paralympics. That's where I started working with a lady by the name of Janice Wolf, who is in California, and found out that currently blind and visually impaired is not included. Blind or visually impaired archery is not included in the Paralympics. When reaching out to USA Archery and World Archery, found out that it was because we don't have the numbers to be able to, the number of participants to be able to do that. And that's where Janice and I are now working, trying to build up the numbers and get more individuals involved. World Archery has recently, they have added in a classification for visually impaired. So you have a visually impaired para section, which you're classified as a B1, B2, or B3 archer. Currently, I am a B2 a classified visually impaired archer. There are only four of us in the United States that are classified. There are two B1 archers and two B2 archers in the United States. So we're trying to build those numbers up. So if people are looking for some sort of sport and an activity get involved with, archery is a very good one because you can work at your own pace. You can set your own goals, or you can work on a team. So it's one of those things where you can build it yourself and do, you know, pick how you would like to do it and how you'd like to build up what you're wanting to do. I know we're getting close on time here, so and I'd like to open it up to questions. But if people are interested, we have Rigney School of Archery here in Central Illinois, Northside Archery Club in the Chicagoland area. It's near Belmont Harbor. You have Illinois Target Archery Association, which is in the northern part of the state, USA Archery, and then also World Archery. The next Chicago Para Archery Championship is going to be in August of next year. We only had a small amount of people. We only had around 7 participants this year. Next year, we're hoping to have around 40 or 50. So if you're interested in doing that, please let us know. So So yeah, I'll go ahead and open it up now for questions if people have more questions.
All right, are there any questions for Mr. Hill? We have about 5 minutes before the lunch break. Any questions in the physical room or in the Zoom room? To raise your hand, star 9 on Windows PC, Alt Y. Okay, Kathy Randall, Glenn, if you don't mind running the mic again.
Lewis.
Oh, okay.
And then Anil Lewis has a question. And then I think there's one more. Okay.
Quickly, I'm totally blind, but I do a lot of athletic stuff. Can I live in Jacksonville 5 months of the year, so could I possibly get involved in archery as a totally blind person?
Yes, you can. Actually, Janice Wolf, who I'm working with out of California, is completely blind. And you can. What you would use is you would actually use a tactile sight, which is a stand that helps you line up where you're at. And then you have an assistant that will help guide you through to make sure that you are aiming directly towards the target. So yes, that's not a problem. And if you're in Jacksonville, Illinois, Rigney School of Archery, it would be a great option for you. I will send over a list of contacts for all of that. So please let me know.
All right. Thank you. Anil Lewis. Yes.
Could you build on that? You said, because I'm thinking I missed how it all works. So there's a tactile sight. Is there any audio component, or how do you actually do it non-visually?
Okay. So, so the tactile, what is the actual visual part of it, or not visual, I'm sorry, the audible part of it would be your assistant. A visually impaired archer is allowed to have an assistant there to help line them up and to sight them in. And then the tactile sight, it's allowed, you're allowed to have 2 centimeters of that sight actually touching you. So when I stand and I'm going to shoot, my left hand is my bow hand. And that tactile sight has a little arm that comes out that touches my left hand. And that is what helps guide me on my left, right, up or down. And then I use muscle memory from where they tell me I'm shooting. So if I shoot and I'm told that I'm low right, then I know I need to adjust up and left. And then once I have it centered in, they let me know every time where to shoot from there. So that way you can use the muscle memory to figure out where you need to be at each time. So it's one of those things that it sounds very difficult, but once you do it a couple times and you get into it, it's really neat. And it's a lot of fun because you start hitting the target and then you start getting better and better. And it's from my end, it was really enjoyable. So
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We have 3 questions from Zoom and then we will have to wrap up our morning general sessions. We have Terry Gorman and then we'll go to Jennifer Howe. And there's one. Oh, no, that wasn't the one. And Nadia Sherman. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought she said a different name. So first Terry Gorman, and then Jennifer Howe, and then Nadia Sherman. And then we'll wrap up for lunch.
Sounds good.
So Terry, the floor is yours. Terry Gorman, you have your hand raised. You can ask your question. Okay. All right, Terry, we see that you've lowered your hand. If you still have a question, we'll have some time maybe after Nadia. Jennifer Howe, you have your hand raised. You have a question for John Hill?
Yes, please. I have a 13-year-old here biting at the bit trying to get involved with archery. So if you could,
yes.
So if you have information, like an email, I can email. We're in the Midwest, St. Charles, Illinois. So
okay.
I don't know what the closest area is for us.
Okay, yeah.
So, John, what I can do, if it's okay with you, I can send your email address to Jennifer and anyone else who's interested. Then that way you know who it's coming from and I can connect
perfect.
Anyone who's interested. So, I have a ton of emails. So
I can put together a list of links for people, too.
Okay, that would be great.
That you can
just awesome. Thank you.
You're
if
welcome.
If anyone is interested, I can link you up with John Hill. So send me an email at president@nfbofillinois.org. Nadia Sherman, the floor is yours.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. John, that was a terrific speech. I was so moved by it, and I'm also jumping at the bit to get into it. And I'm in Chicago, so are there good clubs here?
Yes, the Northside Archery Club is a great club. They were the ones that started the para archery championship that's in Chicago.
That's awesome.
They have done, not only did they have visually impaired, they had others that were in wheelchairs. We had one gentleman who only had one arm and was shooting with a mouth release. So the Northside Archery Club has done a phenomenal job of working with people that are not only disabled, but also blind and visually impaired. Plus, they have all the proper equipment for it. So
cool, because I already have one unusual hobby and I want another corn. I am in a BMW motorcycle club.
Well, that is really pretty cool. It'd be interesting to see you driving a motorcycle and shooting a bow at the same time. I'm guessing turn some heads.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, John Hill, for being here with us. Nadia, if you'd like more information, I can connect you with John as well.
Please do.
I do know that we did have another hand raised, but we are at the end of our general session. So, Patrick Olson, I do know that you have your hand raised. Send me an email. I can connect you with John, and he can answer any questions that you have offline. Thank you to everyone for being here this morning for our first general session. My first general session as your state president. All right, so we will adjourn for lunch. We're going to come back into the physical location at noon for the student luncheon.
Not yet, though.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if you were asleep over there.
Rise. Oh, no. I'm going to. Trust me. We have a donation of $50 from somebody we couldn't do without around here, Pat Olson.
Yay!
So here we go again. Let's see. Tracy Gerald.
Tracy Gerald?
Yes.
Are you in
the Traci Gerolds.
I don't remember that name, but if Tracy, if you are in the physical room or in Zoom, if you are in Zoom, *9 or *Alt+Y. Tracy, if you're in the room.
Maybe not.
All right. Yeah, it looks like Tracy is not here.
That's too bad. Alexander Brown.
Oh, no, Alexander's not here. He's one of our, he was one of our exhibitors yesterday.
Okay. Listen, Zoom land, I'm shaking up, shaking.
Shake him up, baby. Right.
Oh, I bet he might be out.
If you call
Zoom
my
land.
Name, I'll twist and shout.
I bet this person's out in Zoom land. Gregory Rosenberg.
Okay, Greg Rosenberg. Is Greg in the Zoom room?
I am in the Zoom room.
All right,
yay!
So Greg. You can contact Michael Nowitzki at treasurer@nfbofillinois.org to let him know if you would like to receive your check as a paper check through the mail or if you would like it Zelled. Or you also have the option, as many have been doing today, to donate it back to the affiliate or to the student division. All right, thank you so much.
I'm going to donate it to the student division.
All right.
Yay!
And on that note, thank you so much. All right, we are adjourned for lunch, so we look forward to seeing those in Zoom back at noon for the student luncheon. Adjourned.